someone who calls themselves a Christian looks like. And they have, you know, we've all built our own image of what a Christian is, really. And these images of Jesus, they play directly into some of the stereotypes that we have built about what that follower of Jesus looks like. And some of these images, they're self-imposed. Others are imposed on us by those who don't follow Jesus. And, you know, here, we've got retro Jesus dances to dubstep. These are easy to find, by the way. Next one. Happy Jesus. I like this one. I like a happy Jesus. Sometimes we think that Jesus is like the next image, serious. Never smiles. That's the image of Jesus that we grew up with, right? Just this stern guy. He was sort of gentle, but he never smiled at us. That's sort of the image of Jesus I grew up with. Is there one more? Ah, yeah. This is my personal favorite. Thumbs up, Jesus. But these are images that we have about Jesus. And these have been built by folks looking at how the Christian world lived, how we see ourselves. And sometimes we haven't helped the image. And I want to show you a video by a group called Sunseed, just to give you an example. Maybe you've heard of them. Maybe you haven't. Had enough? I've had enough. I've watched it a couple of times this week, so Son, you can stop it. Sunseed, they were around the 1970s, and back in those days, you know, Christian and secular artists did stuff like this, so, you know, we can forgive them a little bit, but sometimes that is the image that gets projected onto the church and Christianity of today. Grab onto these images and we hold on to them and say, that's what it's like. And recently, that was the ska version. If you've ever heard of ska, they recently performed that with a ska band in a concert. So somehow, when this video was released, it ended up on YouTube. It grew into this huge thing. Now it's even in German. So you can look it up. Jesus is a Friend of Mine is what it's called. But it's amazing how the internet can make things popular again. But what if there's a different image of a follower of Christ? Because we all have this idea of what it should be. We all have presuppositions about Christians, about church. Even for people who have been going to church their whole lives, we all have these ideas of what it should be. What does it look like? And we're starting this series about discipleship, about the Great Commission, over the next 4 weeks. And we'll discuss what a disciple is and how a disciple is called to live. So if you're new to church and just checking things out, then I want to say to you, this series will give you a window into what a follower of Jesus looks like. And we hope that you're challenged to discover more about Jesus. And if you're a follower of Jesus, we hope that you'll be challenged to take the next step in that role and that lifestyle of discipleship. But just to illustrate a little bit of what it could look like, I want to give you this story that I heard a long time ago by a guy named Keith Phillips. Let's suppose that on January 1st, right, New Year's resolutions, you're flying over BC and your plane explodes. Okay, it's getting depressing already. Stay with me. Your body falls to the ground, you're dead on impact. Before long, a farmer, totally fictional character, let's call him Carl Wicky, he discovers your corpse. Your body's cold. You're obviously dead. Being a practical man, Carl digs a grave for you. Because calling someone to take care of the body, that's just a hassle. So he digs a grave for you. And by the time he puts your body in the earth, it's too late to cover you up. And he says, you know what, I'll just finish this in the morning. And he returns home. That night, Jesus comes to you, and he says, you're dead. Your life, it's completely over. but I will breathe into you the breath of new life if you promise to do anything I ask you to do and go anywhere that I ask you to go. Your immediate reaction is, you know, no way. That's unreasonable. That's slavery. But then you realize you're not in a good bargaining position. So you come to your senses and you agree. Instantly, your lungs, heart, other vital organs, they begin to function again. You come back to life, you're born again. No task is too difficult, no hours too long, no place too dangerous. Nothing is unreasonable. Why? Because you're living on borrowed time. You have no claim to your life. You died on January 1st in a BC hayfield. Would you make that deal with Jesus if it actually happened to you? After Jesus was crucified, killed for the sins of all humanity for all time, he was buried, and 3 days later, he rose again alive. And during a period of about 40 days, he met with his followers to encourage them, to challenge them to the point, the direction ahead and what was going to happen. And sitting on a mountainside near the shores of the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus started his ministry, where he called most of his disciples, he shared with them these words that we call the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28, verse 16 to 20. It says, "Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age.'" And we're looking at this passage actually this week and next week. And so we're only going to look at the bigger picture of what a disciple is and what discipleship is. And then next week we'll look at the actual, this is what Jesus commanded us to do. But I love how Matthew portrays the perspective that the disciples had in seeing Jesus. Some worshipped him, which is an image of Jesus being God. Of course they worshipped him. He defeated death. But some of them doubted. And that word in the Greek means to duplicate, to be of two minds, to waver, to hesitate. Everyone wanted to believe, but some weren't so sure. Some experienced that internal war that can happen on a regular basis, of being two minds. On the one side, we want to believe, but on the other side, this seems absurd. And reason, it tries to take over and say, this is impossible. Even then, in that event, there were folks who doubted what they were seeing. And that should be an encouragement to us when we have our own doubts. That even the ones who were witnesses to it had their own struggles with what was going on. And they don't try to hide that. But that was some of them. The other group, there were those who believed everything they saw. So together, Jesus didn't exclude the ones who were doubting. Together, Jesus said, this is what I'm calling you to do. Together, this was the group of followers who would continue on into the book of Acts and start the church, taking incredible risks with their lives in obeying Christ and bringing the hope of Jesus to the world. And Jesus, he had a huge task in mind for his followers. All is a key word in Matthew 28. It emphasizes the identity of Jesus in being God. All authority, all nations, all things. And before issuing and giving his commission, he laid the foundation for what would bring them success. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. This was the heart of what he wanted to get across to them. Without his authority, the mission of the disciples, our mission today, to make disciples, it wouldn't have even started. Jesus would give them his authority to bring his good news to the world. So what does that look like? What is a disciple? And to get a glimpse of that, we need to look at some of the other teachings of Jesus when it came to being one of his followers. And a really good one is found in Luke chapter 13. Great crowds were following Jesus. And I don't know if it was in frustration and challenge, what it was, but he turned around and said to them, if you want to be my follower, you must love me more than your own father and mother, your wife and children, your brothers and sisters. Yes, more than your own life. And this wasn't him saying you need to leave them and abandon them. But he was saying you need to love them more than you need to love me more than you love them. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple. And you cannot be my disciple if you do not carry your own cross and follow me. But don't begin until you count the cost. And this is something for all of us to hear in our discipleship. For who would begin construction of a building without first getting estimates and then checking to see there's enough money to pay the bills? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of funds. And then how everyone would laugh at them. They would say, you know, there's a person who started that building and ran out of money before it's finished. Or what king would ever dream of going to war without first sitting down with his counselors and discussing whether he can actually win the battle with the troops he has? And if he's not able, he's going to send a group to promote peace with that country. Jesus said, so no one can become my disciple without giving up everything for me. And he used this imagery of salt to give us a picture of this. Salt is good for seasoning. But if it loses its flavor, how do you make it salty again? Flavorless salt is good neither for the soil nor for fertilizer. It's thrown away. Anyone who is willing to hear should listen and understand. Sometimes in the Christian life, or when we're looking at the Christian life, we go, you know what? There's really nothing in it for me. Just take up my cross and follow him. Why? Because he loves me? I mean, that's a great reason. That's not the whole picture. And sometimes we think from a temporary view, boy, it would be nice if he just plopped some money in my lap. Or I sure hope this makes me look good. I mean, I'm following him. The least he can do for me, you know, is pad my pocket or give me a better portfolio. Or I just want a feeling to get lost in the sensation of Jesus' love. This is a huge struggle for us in our culture. There's so many of us that go, I want to be noticed. I want a reward for this. I want an experience. And with this kind of view, following Christ, it can become a really frustrating process. And if we read this passage without reading some of the other things that Jesus said, there's not a lot of motivation. You know what? Hate everyone and die? I mean, that's how we could interpret it if we wanted to. And if you're reacting to it, that's the approach you're going to go. You want me to hate my because some of the translations use the word hate your mother and father, hate your wife, hate your children more than me. In place of me. And so it's like, what? What are you saying? But we have to change our perspective. When we love Jesus, when we put him first, it transforms all of our relationships. I tell my kids all the time, the best gift that I can give to my wife and to them is to love Jesus more than them. And sometimes they go, what? That still hasn't clicked in yet, totally, but you know, they're getting there. Because it's a hard thing to understand. But there's a motivating factor, and one of the parables that Jesus told in Matthew 13 said, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in a field. In his excitement, he hid it again, sold everything he owned to get enough money to buy the field and to get the treasure. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a pearl merchant on the lookout for choice pearls. When he discovered a pearl of great value, he sold everything he owned and bought it. And when we consider what Christ did on the cross, I mean, he died for us, for our sin, and rose again so that we can have a relationship with him, so we can share in an inheritance with him. It's why we exist as a church today. Our motivation is the same. We believe God changes lives. Discipleship is not about being grumpy about the cost to self, about how I will look, how I will have to sacrifice. Discipleship is valuing fellowship with Jesus as the most important thing. It's a bargain. It's a change of mindset. And Jesus himself modeled for us in how he lived his life, how he submitted to his Father, and how he calls us to submit to him. And in Philippians 2, I'm skipping ahead a bit, Adam, it says, your attitude should be the same that Christ Jesus had, that though he was God, he did not demand and cling to his rights of God. He made himself nothing. He took the humble position of a slave and appeared in human form. And in human form, he obediently humbled himself even further by dying a criminal's death on the cross. Is the cost too great? Maybe we should ask ourselves, and this is a good question to ask, what am I sacrificing by not following Christ? What will I lose if I don't submit to him? And evaluating the cost means looking at everything in light of what Christ has accomplished for me and for you on the cross. So how do we understand what discipleship looks like? How can we evaluate where we are at as a disciple? As a group's leadership team, we're working through a book called The Four-Chair Discipling. And you're going to have to skip ahead, I think. And it gives a great picture of what we're working through in a book called, Four-Chair Discipling. But Jesus recognized that people he encountered, they were all at different stages of growth and development. And he worked to challenge them to move to the next level. And the command in Matthew 28 is to make disciples. And in the time of Jesus, a disciple was simply a follower. They would attach themselves, if they were qualified, if the guy, the rabbi, the teacher, wanted to have a student follow him around, their job was to basically become exactly like their master, like their rabbi, in how they acted, in what they believed, and in what they taught. And so that's what Jesus' command was. I want you to be my disciples. I want you to model my life. And at Westwood Church, our vision that we, the way we state it, is together at Westwood Church, our vision is to bring Jesus into life by becoming an increasingly healthy, vibrant, and effective witness for Jesus in Prince George and around the world. So how can we frame this in a way that helps us evaluate where we're at? And an example we can give is using four chairs. Chair number one is simply come and see. In his early ministry, Jesus called 12 people in particular to follow him. And in one of those instances, one of them asked, where are you staying? And Jesus said to him, come and see. Literally, that can be translated as just show up. And in this chair, folks haven't necessarily, they haven't committed to following Christ, but they're curious. They want more information about who Jesus is, what he did. They want to know why Jesus still makes a difference in our lives. On a trip, somehow this year, I ended up as an assistant coach for my son's senior boys volleyball team. And if you know me, I don't actually know volleyball, so I helped as best I could. Sometimes they would say, Craig, you need to go sit down so we can do our warm-up properly. And I'd be like, fine. But at the provincials, we're sitting at a table and we're chatting, and one of the boys said, Craig, why are you so happy all the time? And I mean, it's a pleasure just to be with those guys and hang out with them. But I said, you know what? It's because I have Jesus. That was it. And I said, if you guys want to check it out, you're welcome to come to our church. And one of the guys misheard me. He thought I said, I am Jesus. So he pushed his water glasses across the table to me. You can guess what's coming. He's like, well, why don't you turn these into wine then? That's what he said to me. And the other friend said, that's not what he said, and using an expletive. And then he said, I have Jesus. It's fascinating hanging out with guys who have, they've never been in a church even. So really refreshing sometimes too. But this is all new to them. They're just curious. But sometimes this person can be called a seeker. They want more information of all this. And if you think you fall into this category, a step to take would be to keep coming to Sunday mornings and maybe consider taking an Alpha course that we're going to be starting next month. 7 evenings with food that look at who Jesus is, why he came. It's a great place to discover some of the core things about what Christianity is. And these folks, they're still in the mindset of, you know, what's in it for me thinking, and that's okay. The next chair is follow me. This is a person who's made a decision to follow Jesus. This person has come to a point where they say, I know enough about Jesus to make a decision. And to these folks, Jesus is simply saying, follow me. Learn from me. This chair is someone who has recognized their own sinfulness and their need to turn from that sin, repent, and follow Jesus. And Jesus saying, you know, follow in my steps. Join me in this journey as a disciple. Grow. This assumes, you know, curiosity. And if you see yourself in this category, a next step would be to keep coming to the services. You can see a pattern there. It's just going to be keep coming to the services because it's a part of how we celebrate as a family. Get involved in a life group. Build regular habits of Bible reading, prayer, giving, and serving into your life. And if you don't know about Bible reading and prayer, on your phone or on the website, you can go to youversion.com, and it has a myriad of resources on how to read the Bible and different reading plans that are structured for people who are just curious, everything. You can find all of that there. And you can come to the Becoming Good News People seminar in a couple weeks. These folks are still eye-oriented. That's okay. The next chair is fisher of people. After following Jesus around the shores of Galilee for a few months, Jesus said to two of his followers, well, actually to two guys who were just sort of, you know, watching this, he said to Peter and Andrew, follow me and I will make you fishers of people. Jesus had a clear goal in mind. I want to produce in you someone who will be equipped to make disciples. Part of Jesus' mission was to leave behind people who were equipped to continue on what he had started. This is someone who's maturing and is involved more fully in ministry that requires maturity. A step to take in this area might, oh yeah, and in the follow me part, you can get involved in service somewhere. Usher, greeter, there's opportunities in children's ministry and youth ministry that don't require a deep maturity of faith, but are opportunities for service in the church. So I'm just taking note of that. This is someone who's maturing, involved in, like a step to take in this area might be starting a life group or getting involved in children and youth as a life group leader. The folks in this chair know how to take care of themselves spiritually, and they're engaged in the process of doing that. They take care of it themselves. And these folks actively look for ministry, both in the church and in the community where they can introduce Christ. They have a consistent display, not a perfect display, but a consistent display of the fruits of the Spirit in their lives. Actually, all of these have from follow me up. There's this process of growing in the fruits of the Spirit. But these folks are more we-oriented. Finally, go and bear fruit. After his last meal with the disciples, which is something that we're celebrating today, where we remember what Jesus did, Jesus was on his way to his crucifixion, and before his arrest, he gave this challenge to his disciples, go and bear fruit, and as the Father sent me, I am sending you. Jesus was saying to them, this process I did with you, this 3 years I spent with you, I want you to do it with others. And if you see yourself in this category, steps to take would be life group leadership, larger ministry leadership, such as teaching classes, teaching in children's ministry, developing ministries that the church needs, leading Alpha, that sort of thing. This is someone who is mature. These folks are other-oriented. And the goal of the Christian life, if you use the four chairs as an example, this is just a tool to help frame it. Don't use this is how it has to be. This is just to help us understand a bit. Christ wants his followers to be in the fourth chair. The chair isn't just for pastors and elders. That has to do more with calling to a specific role. This has to do with simple discipleship. And through the Holy Spirit and God's community, we are part of a 2,000-year process of discipleship. And when you think about that, that's incredible what God has done. What if we became known, and we are known, but what if it grew that we were known as a church in Prince George where they rejoiced because we were maturing disciples? Remember that story at the beginning of the airplane? This is the author's words, a great paradox of life is that there is tremendous freedom in that death. A dead person is no longer concerned with their own rights, with independence, or with the opinions of others. And that's a freedom I want to invite all of you to. Do you want that life? Come and see. Follow Jesus. He will make you a fisher of people, and you will bear fruit. I just want to invite up the folks serving communion today as we remember this call on our lives to be his disciples, and as we remember what Christ did for us.